you want to listen to Let's Go, the weekly Alibay podcast about weekly Alibay from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Oh, my devil.
And it's me trying to muster fake energy for the podcast. It's Brian. And on this episode, we are covering Alibay that aired the week of November the 18th, 2019 to November the 24th, 2019. And if it sounds like there's more slobber and saliva in my talking, I've got a mouth ulcer, and so the longer I start talking, the more I start slobbering in an attempt to cover up and protect that mouth ulcer. Okay, let's get started with Super Shiro, Episode 6, Summer Break Exercises with Shinsuke. In which we get a special guest star. Cray and Shin-chan shows up.
Wow.
But you never see his face. It's like, who is this mysterious cameo?
I thought it was like the Tom and Jerry thing where the humans all have their heads out of, or not just Tom and Jerry, but like, you know, Peanuts and all that kind of jazz.
Yep. So Shin-chan has to go and do his summer break exercises, and he's taking Shiro along. Meanwhile, Shiro's got a message that a bone type object has been detected by the river. And so, yeah, he has to keep on, he puts on his uniform, has to take his uniform off, go out with Shin-chan, and then he realizes that while he can sneak off, some of these exercises involve turning round, so he has to quickly run back each time Shin-chan turns around so he doesn't get suspicious that his dog is secretly a superhero. Even though when he turns around, his dog is wearing a cloak and a big S on his chest.
And he has to hold the S in his mouth for the entire episode for the most part. That's pretty great too, yeah.
Yeah, as well as walking down the street, he's just like, you know, I keep forgetting the name of the bad guy, but he's just kind of there peeking around all the corners and lampposts. It's like, oh, he's like the bodyguard in prison, trying to scamper threats in the vicinity because Shin-chan gets hurt.
And he's also using Shin-chan as a literal shield against his mind-reading goggles.
Yes.
So he can only get the thoughts of Shin-chan.
Yeah, Dekapu is the villain's name.
Dekapu, that's just, yeah.
And then they get into basically a skimming stones contest. They're trying to...
That was a really good take in it, because they're like, it's just pebbles on the beach. It's like, just look for pebbles. It's just as they throw them away, they're like, hey, that was cooler than the way I threw it away. How the fucking dare you? Like, that becomes the contest. It's not them, because, you know, they can just keep looking at pebbles, but it's the skimming that becomes the contest today, which is nice. Good take on it.
Hit a Rottweiler in the head who's in some bushes on the other side of the shore.
And both trying to pass it off on the other guy.
Yeah. Mostly dog.
Mm. He does give them like just basically a stern warning the first time, like don't fucking do it again, basically.
But then
so he's all right.
Shin-chan whacks him in the head with the bo-bo-bo-bo. Because it's lovely and flat, perfect for skimming. And
also it has a exotic and exciting smell. I've forgotten the three fucking things that it smells like.
Yes, because they run off when they see this other dog coming, and that dog beats up Dekapu, and Dekapu hadn't even done it that time.
This guy coming, though.
And, this time, Shiro's absolutely certain this is the bone of a bone, because his owner also thought it had exactly the same attributes that they're looking for. And, of course, it blows up.
I was expecting it to blow up in the end, and then that to, like, reveal his cover, that there was a huge explosion in their back garden. Because he brought it home for once, but no, just... It was not the bone. That's the joke.
Yeah, that's a little bit of variation by bringing in Shin-chan.
The search continues.
Indeed. And the formula of the pair of dogs trying to wallop each other will no doubt continue as well. what should I say? That other thing was on the Saturday, so I shall mention it then. Then we've got... Null and Petter, Episode 8, My Big Sister's Bugging Out. I did watch this episode. I did not watch any of the intervening ones.
Yeah, you're pretty much caught up. You're good.
Yeah, pretty much good, yes. So, this was a lot more fun than the episodes, I think, when I was last watching it. I mean, partly because it had a Jigen reference in.
That was unexpected and enjoyable.
And
yeah.
Okay. A Masami Ibari reference as well.
Oh, okay. Time to jump back in on this one then. I did just going on the current form. I didn't have my high hopes for it, so I ducked out this time.
So basically, it starts with Null, like, using a VR helmet to see when, like, looking back at footage that Petter had recorded of Petter beating up these, weird bugs.
It's like a helmet that's just, like, Petter's arms are plugged into.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they start experimenting on them, and like, okay, right, so they eat whatever is put in front of them. If they eat after they get to a certain size, they split into two. And...
Yeah, they have it like eat a bolt in a contained environment, because they have a little bit left on her big comedy hammer thing.
Yes, and...
It's like, well, if they can eat anything, I wonder if they can eat this rice. They certainly can. Well, keep eating the rice, guys. There's plenty more where that came from.
And the big comedy hammer wasn't doing enough. I can't remember what they're called. Those rubber hammers. They do have a specific brand name.
The squeaky hammer things. Yeah, I can't think of it.
Petter has upgraded, and that's where we get the Masami Ibari sword shot. Except
it's a hammer. That's better.
It's just a bigger hammer.
Yeah, she does comment, like, he's like, that's not, it's just bigger though, but you're trying to hit more bugs. It's like, I can hit more bugs with a bigger hammer.
Then the pair of them go after the bugs. Petter's using the hammer, Null's using a laser blaster type thing.
Yeah, a little ray gun, basically.
And we
get the Jigen reference, obviously.
Yes, cause, like, Null say, you should use a gun like me, and then Petter turns into Jigen and say, in the time you take you to reload, I'll have destroyed, I'd have killed two bugs. Because then the problem becomes that Null runs out of power for her ray gun. But luckily, someone has installed ray gun USB power outlets on the street.
Convenient, oh, well.
And Petter's like, no, that's a little too convenient, Null. And it turns out it was a trap by the bugs. They shapeshifted into this. And they basically they lock round Null's hand, and then a whole load of the bugs turn into the truck that killed Petter.
Yeah. to make Null kind of freeze on the spot. Yes. It's like, oh my god.
Which then I was like, oh, is the video game going to be one of these video games where it's you're just the girl dealing with her grief through the world of video games? Because that's definitely where I thought it was going. Except, Petter saves her. We get the full flashback of how Petter died in the first place. So saves Null, and Petter tries to make Null stay at home, which was the word she told us to look after the house. So that was her last words to her before she died. And so Null doesn't want to let her go. And then the truck hits this Petter, but this Petter is a super strong robot, and so just smashes the truck.
Like, don't worry, I got it this time. Wham!
Chip and Yen finally beat that car.
Yes. Well, you've watched the Shadow Side movie, and yes. 30 years in the future, Chip and Yen has got very good at smashing cars. I think that's where it left off at the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I wouldn't say really resolved, but I guess, like, trauma kind of dealt with a little.
Yeah, but that's my suspicion of where it's going, is that this is, it's all in her head.
Like maybe. Therapy or something. Yeah.
We shall see. Or not, if I forget to watch it.
or is that Jacob's Ladder, and it's actually Petter, who is, just like her last, like, dream of her dying brain. She lies broken in the street.
Well, you have to buy the video game to find out. So that might be the case. Then we got Blade of the Immortal, Act 7, Evil Shadow.
Yeah.
A lot more, like, set up in this one, and a lot of, like, hey, let's hang around with this creepy stranger, even though that's, like, the worst idea you could do.
Okay, this one. I think I watched one more ahead, but I did watch this one too, a little Okay. Long ago. But
this
I remember,
was the
I,
one
I remember
that starts Shira. With the guy, there's a bunch of assassins going around killing the Itorio guys.
Yes, it's a rival band of sword fighting people who would
presumably hired to kill them or something. We're not entirely clear on that, but my favorite was that fucking guy with the sunglasses with like it's like a Master of the Flying Guillotine, but like a handcuff that's made out of swords.
It's without the basket, yeah.
It's without the basket, but like the mechanism looks very like a handcuff, that kind of thing. I was like, oh, that looks rad as shit.
It is. and like, you know, just like, oh, I'm just a samurai, dude. I got a sword, but I will do anything this way. It's like, ah, you're just like some joker who did let in to make up numbers. You're dead meat.
Because basically the guy has the flying guillotine on his head and is like, hey, tell me how many masters I got. It's like, we don't really run masters, but there's like 30 guys who are as good as the top guy. So if that helps at all, I was like, can you let me free now? Nah, chops off head. So that's how many big dudes you have. Other than that, it's just like the goon squad, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. This is probably all tied up as well with the news that the Itorio have been recognized by the Shogunate and will be in fully recognized as an actual clan. And it's like,
congratulations, you just have to open a bunch of schools up around the place and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Here's your official government recommendation. Yeah, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, and you can't really get Kagehisa's sort of read on it. It's like, this is sort of what they were going for, but then what's his face? Magatsu, the dude with the mask that Nintendo can do, is like, he's kind of suspected the whole thing altogether, but he's got what he wanted or...
Well, he specifically says, like, listen, I hope no hard feelings, but I'm going to leave because, like, I fucking hate samurai, so I don't want to be a samurai, like an officially recognized dude. I just want to go around killing samurai. I had a great time with you guys. And your man's like, oh, yeah, no hard feelings. If you want, you can still bunk up in that place. We have you bunked up. And he's like, yeah, thanks. I'll think about it.
Maybe. He's going straight there.
he goes straight there and goes, I'm going to leave here, but, you know... Because he's living like upstairs in like a horror house basically, isn't he?
Brothel, yeah. And there's like one of the prostitutes there, and she's I guess pretty sweet on the guy.
She fancies him, but he kind of sees her more like a little sister, and she fucking pegs him on that straight away. And he's like, "I bet I look like your little sister." He's like, "No, you look nothing like her. You're about her height though, so you know, close enough." But, he likes her, but, she, like, I wanted to settle down with you. Like, I was going to be out of this biz in like a year because I only need the money to help my sick mother, but she's not going to last. So I'm probably just going to quit and form a normal life. Do you think you might want to put down the sword? Okay. No, fair enough. And she kind of like basically like wrestles him into admitting it's like, okay, I will come back and visit. Which was like, that was sweet. And I was like, this isn't going to end well.
Exactly.
And then it super didn't.
This is laden with inevitable deadly foreshadowing this whole episode.
Like there's the two mirroring plots that are happening, but both of them are kind of like introduce a thing where it's like, oh, that's bad. Don't do that in the story because that's not going to go well. Like basically like he leaves, scene transition, a samurai walks out, is like, hey, that guy just left, but don't worry. I tortured one of the brothel workers there and got the information out of her. And I was like, oh no. It was very obviously going to happen. So that's incentive for your man now, unfortunately. That sucks. Meanwhile, at the start of the episode, just in case you forgot about it, and he's there in the background the whole time, Rin is hanging out with this dog. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
That's a cute dog. Oh, no.
Where did he come from? We don't know. It was just always just there. Just hanging out.
He's
just like
a stray, like a mongrel or something.
As they will, just squatting in the like abandoned shack on the side of the road while they make their journey around.
A loose dog, much like themselves. But anyway, some creepy dude shows up while Mugen's off. What was he? I think he was going to buy some corn or something, wasn't he?
But he was in there, like you know, Manji's going to scrounge up some corn and then Rin's going to build a fire. This is after, you know, she's been getting her ass handed to her.
I did like her thing. It's like, finally, I'm going to go real into training. All you got to do is train me. And it's like, and he's like, if I take it seriously, you'll cry though. And he's like, no. I've made my mind work. And he kicks the shit out of her and she's all bruised up and she's kind of like, you know, putting the swelling down with cold water. And he's like, okay, you're not going to improve in like 2 days. Like no training montage is going to fix you. So I'm just going to go buy us some corn. So you get a fire going and we'll cook it.
Look, good hustle. Good game. rub some dirt into it. We'll take this off maybe when you're a bit more able-bodied. And when that's when like this nasty fella Shira comes in and says, like, saying, "What's this? Some girl I told you about fucking dead. What do you know about stuff?" Just starts,
and this is the same guy who killed the girl working in the brothel. Yeah.
So,
you know he's a bad customer.
Mm-hmm.
But I like all he does is shove her in, which not great because he's looking for Manji, and he's like, "Oh, I was looking for you because I heard you were after these guys, and we're after these guys, so you know our shit aligns."
I got a proposition for you.
I like we're gonna they're actually getting officially recognized, so he's gonna be heading to there, and Manji's like, "Yeah, I know that. Thanks. You want to team up and take him out?" He's like, "I'm gonna take him out before he gets there, actually." Yeah, I mean, I'm a numbers is good though, right? Huh, Manji, come on, work with me, buddy.
Yeah. As well, they got Rin, two men before, can pick him out of the crowd. And this girl, they're all about dirty fighting as well, like super dirty fighting. You've seen one of the other hits against Itaru Ryu, what's her face? I've forgotten her name right now. Hyakurin, something like that. Her thing is that she's just like, go in disguise and just like lure the guys into honey trap and then poison them.
I did like the way it was like, "Oh, she used the poison." He's like, "But we drank the same wine." And, later on, she's like, puking it up basically. it's not like, yes, after 10,000 years, I've made myself fucking immune to it. It's like, no, I'm just not gonna fucking eat it, basically, is my plan.
Yeah, once he comes out, okay, acting all cool, totally killed that guy. I'm gonna get sick because I drank like a half liter of sesame oil to keep the poison from like
coating her stomach and also making her horribly ill. I don't know, it's just like that's pretty fun.
Dedication.
Like, from her looking really cool taking out that dude, but yeah, they resort to really underhanded methods, and even the guy with the cool sword was kind of like, "Hey, I'll let you go if you tell me the information. Here's the information. Gonna kill you anyway." They're very down and dirty kind of guys. Next day Manji's gone to pick up his swords being sharpened. You gotta sharpen them swords.
He's got a lot of swords. He's got a lot of blades up his sleeves. It takes a long time to get them all taken care of and maintained.
But meanwhile, this creepy dude is like, "Hey, I bought us some what was it? Pork, I think he said."
Or,
initially that was Manji. He chopped up and cooked some Manji for himself. And it's like, "Here, try it out, Rin. It's like, it's totally tasty and very good for you."
Yeah. And it's again, another questioning or test of Rin's resolve. Have you got the killer instinct to go to with this? If you're so, like, shocked about, eating the meat right here, then, like, think about it this way. You don't think twice when you kill like a pig or a cow or that and just cook that and eat that. No, but we wouldn't call that cruelty. Not many people do that.
Because he's talking about his background where he's been killing guys for money since he was 16. And she's like, "That's fucked up." And he's like, "It's basically, I see it the same way as killing animals because you get delicious meat out of it." You benefit from something else dying.
Yeah. And you prolong your own life by either like defending yourself against someone trying to kill you or, you know, making some money off of the hits you're doing. He's got a good line. It was like, "You're a full-fledged like sword fighter or killer about the time that keeping a running tally is too much trouble."
Mm.
It's a bad dude.
And obviously, it's the dog. They're eating dog.
Yeah, just because we both like, well, maybe she kind of sees like his point. And she's from, okay, well, maybe I go like, swallow some of that and just kind of toughen up, and maybe I'll have fun able to kill that Kagehisa. Okay, well, if you think that's good, check this out. This kicks over and the dog's head rolls into up in front of a lap. He thinks it's all hilarious, of course.
Yeah, kind of goes like the weird camera, and it's like, this is very funny that you're acting so gross to this. You're not really
like unnecessary dog cruelty. What is this? Let's go, Jojo.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, didn't need to see that, but yeah, it's kind of going like dark turns and everything. It ends on that, so I guess we're going to see this guy get himself fucked up.
We get it. He's an absolute dickhead, an asshole. Yeah. They find more grosser ways to convey that to you in the final episode.
Oh, great.
So it may be a test of your resolve.
You watch Babylon, you're fine, Dwayne.
Ah, yeah, but I thought I was free from it for like a week or so while Babylon's off. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I won't get anything horrible. Oh, no. Well, oh, no, this sucks.
It's like, I just think that at least none of the people in Blade of Immortal are drawing on with Sharpies where they're going to cut people beforehand.
I wouldn't be surprised if we come across a guy who does that specifically. It seems like that kind of show, but...
A guy with a big old calligraphy pen.
Yeah, it was.
You had blood calligraphy so far.
Yeah,
so,
and it got like a sword concealed inside the handle. Yeah.
It's not the worst thing because freaking Babylon's still out there waiting for another fucking episode.
Wait till after Christmas too.
Give me the fucking break for the Christmas break of it. But it's still a good show, and I like the kind of mirroring of stories between Rin and Manji and. Magatsu and his surrogate kind of sister, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The sooner to get past this Shiro dude and his look, the better, because I was I was appreciating a lot more the more nuanced takes and villainous intent we're getting from the Ituu Ryu so far, and then this guy comes along, he's just like, no subtlety at all, I'm a fucking dickhead, I chop up guys.
The other assassins are kind of like reacting to this dude. He's like, dude, did you just go into that fucking brothel and kill somebody? He's like, ah, don't worry about it. It's just a whore kind of thing. And I was just like, yeah, even the other assassins are like, dude, that's fucked up. Come on, don't just randomly kill people.
At Ituu Ryu, you know, probably would be indulged in a lot of heinous activity as well, but they got principles, man. They got ethics.
yeah, like different fucking levels of evil. It's an odd one. This guy's a little too fucking on the nose of how comically fucking cartoonishly evil, yeah.
Say what you will about the Ituu Ryu, man. It's an ethos.
dear. As to whether that'll stand up to becoming like an officially recognized samurai thing, I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah.
Then we've got Dino Girl Galco episodes 1 and 2 I watched. So 20 episodes of this dropped on Friday. On to Netflix.
It's a Netflix thing. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why I didn't see it.
So this is by a bunch of Shin-chan folks. And it's very much written for Netflix in that the end of one episode will leak into the start of the next episode from the two I've seen.
Oh, so you can just like watch them all.
Yeah. And it's okay so far. I mean, I know Kimiko Ueno is writing some of this, but not any of the episodes I've watched so far, whereas she's written every single episode of Super Shiro, I do believe, so far. So, but yes, it's, I would describe it as the first post The Amazing World of Gumball anime.
So it's very like cross media kind of thing.
It's not so much mixed media. It's more like how the characters are. So she's a transfer student, and we meet her parents. Well, her mum's a normal human. Her dad's a tiny frog. So she arrives at the transfer at the school she's transferred to, and in the class the teacher's a robot. And within the class, there is a girl who is either like a very old baby or a girl who's dressed like a baby. But more importantly, there's a girl called Hallie who is literally a comet.
Okay.
I see.
and Galco herself, she's trying not to get angry. The baby tries to deliberately... is basically bullying Galco by like saying, oh, the two girls who want to befriend you? Well, they must be real losers. Only real losers were trying to befriend a, transfer student because they must be so desperate for friends. And then she goes to the two girls about saying, oh, Galco's saying terrible things to you. Terrible things about you two. And then she gets mad at the baby and turns into a giant dinosaur and starts stomping the school. And then in the second episode, the local family of aliens are watching this dinosaur stomp the skull, and the big brother of the alien, of the two younger siblings is like, this is terrible. how are we supposed to take over the world if that dinosaur's going to do it first? We've got to get out there. I'm going to go and take over the world. And they're like, well, if you're going out, can you get us some croquettes?
We need like, find, like, a primary school child who can turn into King Ghidorah to be get control of her rays.
So he heads down and he goes to the croquette shop and he says, well, I won't take over the world. I'll just take over the croquette shop today. And he refuses pay for his croquettes because he explains that he's taken over the croquette shop. The croquette shop owner is from a gag in the first episode. So she's running for school. She's got the toast in the mouth and she's dreaming similarly to Amelie in Rubicon that she's going to run into the love of her life. And she turns the corner and then runs into this handsome man, which turns out to be just a sign of the handsome man, which we then discover in the second episode is the croquette shop owner. So she's got a crush on the croquette shop owner. The big brother alien then has a crush on Naoko, the girl who turns into Gaoko, but has now made her angry, and then she turns into the dinosaur. She says, oh no, she was the dinosaur all along. She breathes fire, which then accidentally sets off a bomb he was carrying. And this turns out...
coincidentally?
Coincidentally. Okay. Not deliberately. The two younger siblings show up wondering where their croquettes are, and they explain to their big brother, oh no, that's the bomb we brought as a last resort. If we couldn't take over the Earth, it will blow the entire planet up with us on it. And then the rest of the episode is everyone running away from this bomb, even though they repeatedly say, this is a bomb which will blow the entire planet up. They're trying to run away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, Gaoko gets back to the alien's house with the bomb, throws it at them, it bounces off their wall and straight into her angry mouth, which only causes her to get angrier and then grow big and smash their house. And then it just explodes in her belly and everyone's perfectly fine. And everyone, like, cheers and congratulates her. Oh, yeah, because I forgot the reason she was angry at the alien was because he'd turned her two friends into insects. And at the end of episode two, they are still insects. Everyone's forgotten by the end of episode two that they were still insects.
Nice.
So I'm going to guess that will be picked up as it goes along. I'll probably check it out every so often when I remember to, but won't be a weekly thing. I just wanted to mention it to let people know that it's on Netflix and you can watch it.
These are all shorts, are they?
Yeah, 9-minute episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Just edging the line.
I see episode 17 is called Mecha Gaoko, so...
It's following a format, sure.
Yes, it's definitely following the format. That's the episode called Final Form Robo. Oh, sorry, Final Weapon Robo. Broken Teacher, Dad's Secret.
It's also a dinosaur.
Yeah, well, he's a tiny frog, that's for sure. There's also one where apparently she seems to be going to a sushi bar run by a cat.
No, that's just too weird. Draw the line right there.
Anyway, on to regular things. Dr. Stone, episode 21, Spartan Craft Club.
AKA episode for Christmas. Yay.
Yeah, Santa shows up this week. A month
someone depetrified him. Or he was the one who petrified everybody for being naughty. I'm going to give you a lump of coal. I'm going to turn you into a lump of coal until you learn your lesson.
Exactly.
For 3,000 years.
So they invent a whole load of shit this episode.
They're really jumping some fucking things, all right? Yeah.
Yes. It's the domino effect of building on your previous successes, though.
That's true. Yeah. Like, I knew once they were building, like, light bulbs in this episode, I was like, oh, they're trying to make a vacuum tube, obviously. But you got to make the less complicated vacuum tube first.
Which gets to the best bit of the dialogue is when they get to the vacuum tube and Gen's like, well, they get into things I don't know about. Well, and then he goes like, well, obviously I've heard of a vacuum tube.
But I don't know what it does.
I know what it looks like, but I have no idea what it does.
So you can't just immediately say, well, they made a hydroelectric generator, so, you know, I know what that is. So, you know, maybe this is something that's similar along those lines. I don't know. This is my thing.
So what do they get this week? They get wine, they get batteries, they get light bulbs, and they want to get a vacuum tube, but the problem they've got is that the bamboo filament isn't.
Well, initially it's that they need to have it like be a perfect vacuum.
Yes, they got various.
That's easily enough resolved. Yes. But
because they make the light bulb, which then gives them like, oh, that makes chromes like excellent. Well, first of all, the Christmas tree and Santa shows up.
Which is great, where he's like, oh, we only took us 2 months to make that, all these lights, and you've lit up a tree, what did I see? And he's like, oh, we're actually just on time. And he's like, wait a minute, is it fucking Christmas Day?
Yes. And we also learned that Senku is 17.
You have to do some math on that, but yeah.
He's a little over 17 years old at some point during this episode. Because this episode again covers a good number of months.
Yeah, they kind of slowly in like a montage again, like switch into their winter gear during this, which I did like as well. Mm. They're just wearing coats over the regular stuff, and then they're wearing winter gear, that kind of thing. I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
They make a blower for the furnace, so they no longer have to do that manually as well. Basically,
they make a lateral movement thing to be like a pump for the blower. The lads are really excited, like, cause they're wrecked after making the hydroelectric generator. And then they see Senku's designs for like turning, circular movement into back and forth movement. They're like, holy shit.
Well, more importantly, they see Senku unable to make these designs. He knows, cause he's done that once already.
As well, there's like this recurring thing of, okay, we've invented a thing that removes this bit of drudgery from our lives, yay! And it's just going, now hang on. We've replaced one hardship now, but we're going to bring another on top. We've still got all this gold wire you gotta weave for me. You got to get all the bits for this thing. There's a lot more to do, lads. No.
I like the father-daughter thing where, like, the boys are like, oh, brilliant, we don't have to pump that thing to make electricity anymore. And your one's like, brilliant, now I can just train you in fighting all the time. And everyone in the village is like, wait a minute, you can make ramen much easier now? Oh, that's fucking excellent. The dad's like, now you can gather materials for winter.
Yes, and now that you're all warm, you've got enough food, now that you can get food faster, now that you've got power, you can get to work and do making these other things for me. Chop, chop.
But I mean, like, you do see in the montage where, you know, they're all working really hard and then they take a ramen break and everything. It's like, it's good. Things are good. Things are working out.
And you also invent, like, pickling and preserving foods for storing for winter. It's like, oh, we can actually have, like, meat anytime we want over the winter. This is great.
Yeah.
Never had this before.
Then it's like, oh, they hit the snag of the bamboo filament is not powerful enough or strong enough to make the vacuum tube. It's fine for the light bulbs. And chrome had been off and got more copper for them, which is how they got their first problem solved with the.
He was excited to explore in caves now that he has like a torch he can bring with him. Cause, oh, they invented batteries. They invented batteries episode. Jesus Christ, they do invent a lot. So he's like, oh, I want to go explore in caves. And what materials do we need? And Senku's like, I think we're pretty good, bro. I think we're good. And he's like, ah, go on, get some copper. Get some copper. Go on.
Go away, you rascal. He's so excited.
be back in time for New Year's. Cause We got a lot of shit to do, and we can't have you dicking about in a cave too long.
And so they get all the rocks out and they try and find something stronger. And, meanwhile, Senku's like, well, okay, I've just got to think New Year's coming up. I just have to think of a new plan. But meanwhile, Suika, because she always wants to be useful,
has stayed up
all night because she's seen lots of rocks when she's been playing in the woods and by the river, and she finds this one rock, and then they go see the new year in, and as the light comes up, it makes the rock she's got glow. And it's a particular type of crystal, I didn't write the name down, but it's essentially a tungsten crystal, and they're like, fucking excellent, well done, Suika.
She light. Yes.
I can't pronounce it
either. I remember that because I think they broke one of the rocks in Land of the Lustrous's issue, Elijah.
Yeah. But it reacts to ultraviolet light, and that's why they're all watching the New Year's sun come up, you know, I think that's a general Japanese tradition, but I'm not sure if it was like a village tradition in this thing. But it's everyone seems on board with
that
it.
That could have been passed down.
It seems like a good enough one to do.
I imagine it's kind of thing they would do in a kind of village. It's free entertainment and wonderful.
But obviously the first beams of light from the sun are ultraviolet, and Senku's like, oh shit, tungsten changes everything. We gotta go get more.
They're gonna form a team. It'll be me, Chrome. We need one more person, and then we run through like a fighting game.
A fighting game menu.
But we get like fact sheets on everybody and their health.
We get
fact
sheets and like a little quote. It's like, I will fight great evil. You know, kind of, I did like that. That was pretty good.
And then it turns out it's going to be none of these people. They need somebody really big and strong. So the third of their spelunking buddies is going to be Magma.
And even Magma's surprised by it.
I'm totally going to push you right down into a pit. You realize this, right? We got to take that risk for the good of science.
But you can see him like working away in the background, so I'm guessing you're going to see that come into play, because everyone else is kind of like, hey, Senku, like, and even like the old dude, like, out and out says it, where it's like, I've spent like 60 years in this village just kind of like tipping away. It's, life is better with you now. You're making shit better. It's pretty fucking rad, dude.
Have you tried this ramen? It's amazing.
Yeah.
The ancients truly were an advanced super civilization. I find that one rock, you could say that was a very serendipitous solution. But as well, it is playing out on a longer timescale than you realize. And besides, kind of discovery and just kind of following the clues and things, trial and error and this kind of dumb luck is a big factor in a lot of discoveries as well. So
yeah, a lot of science is just like fucking it up. That was penicillin initially. Like, you know, it's like, whoops.
And it was all of Chrome's hard work collecting those rocks over many years in the first
place. Yes. And then they would have found it eventually, probably.
And then so he could spend staying up all night searching through each and every rock that he'd got.
It's like the fact that talented people or people with greater determination or just like little kids who really want to fucking help, all these people are useful to a society, including big angry assholes are going to be very useful in society. It's like, well, he's an asshole. It's like, yeah, but he's big and that's good in society.
He can break rocks and carry stuff real good.
Yeah, that's important. It's an important skill we need.
Also, the enemy is full of big angry assholes, many of which are stupider than he is, so.
Yeah, it takes all kinds of people to make a society, not just who you deem worthy, our fucking enemy caveman fucking squadron of big burly dudes.
Yeah. I'm guessing by the long break in the comic that, he realized that he could not draw both of them at the same time. Which is a little annoying, because I was like, there's some massive clues being dropped in the comic recently of various things. I was like, we're gonna get to that. Because there was like the one thing and then the new thing is like, oh, I think we're going to get some sort of little bit more explanation about how the petrification happens soon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's kind of coming to, ahead the current arc, which dropped more kind of tangible evidence and clues as to what the actual thing is, but maybe I actually get a chance to examine it up close.
Yes, but there's also the suggestion in the last couple of issue chapters that it's not exactly the same thing which caused the original petrification. Because the people who've been petrified and depetrified don't have the,
I won't say too much for the benefit of Dwayne and our listeners who haven't read it.
But yeah, there's a slight difference between the people who've been depetrified in that arc to the people who've been depetrified in the previous arcs. It was like a subtle clue to begin with and then a massive clue in the last chapter.
Like, I'm obviously very much still not caught up. I'm still kind of thinking as I get the communication technology is a huge advantage in warfare, but when the other side know exactly where the fuck you are, surely it's not that much of an advantage, is it? But I'm guessing I'm just not seeing the practical use of employing it.
They've got another thing up their sleeve that they haven't, isn't on the plan yet.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping for fucking, like, once we have fucking communication technology down, that leads to this fucking tree. Oh, well, yeah.
Actually, it's more the things they developed in this episode.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I saw a certain thing and I was like, is that already? And then I saw what it was actually for. I was like, oh no, that leaps to that. That's how it works.
Yeah. And I think as well, it's, besides being able to figure out his location, that will be able to coordinate a response around a certain, around a certain front, and also how to adapt your plan of attack or defense.
Change it as necessary. Yeah, yeah.
And also just
information is up to date, basically.
Also just sowing chaos and just like creating diversions as well. And there's a lot of applications for us. This, if you use your head, like Senku does.
Yeah, I guess I just don't have a mind for dickery of warfare, but Senku definitely has a mind for dickery, so yes. Yeah, we should be good.
and Gen does as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw his talent for mimicry, a few episodes ago, basically taking off Tsukasa, what he would do in the situation. That was not just there for a gag. That will come into play very, very soon for a very important part of the story.
Okay, excellent, excellent.
But yes, but the frustrating bit is they have nowhere near enough episodes to finish off that arc this season.
Okay.
So unless they're going into a third season straight away, we've probably got a long wait for the end of the Stone Wars.
Hmm.
Then we got Welcome to Demon School, Arumacon, episode 8, Head Over Heels for Clara. Yeah, this is...
Stop the series right now, it can't get any better than this.
I was gonna say, did it live up to your expectations, but I think that answers that.
I do think the gags I saw did work better on the page in the comic, but there was more stuff that I hadn't seen from the one tweet somebody did of four panels. Of this, just the stuff of like... You're less sexy than a baby.
Even babies have 10% sexiness.
Yeah. Like one or two. Like even a baby that's 3. What's your problem?
Yeah, she states like to the girls with the lower sexiness of like 40-something% or something. It's like, oh, don't worry. I've never had to deal with anyone lower than 20%. That's, you guys are doing okay.
Start of the episode. Amelie's trying to convince Arumacon to come up with some sort of ambition, but then he realizes he's never done anything for himself. He's only ever done things for other people. And so he really struggles. And so she basically gives him the idea of, well, why not just try and go up the ranks? That's what we're here for in school. Just try and go up one rank.
Part of your school life is like trying to improve yourself. And I mean, like maybe if you work towards self-improvement, you'll see what you actually want.
Yes.
Because you'll be a better person for it. Like that's at least a starting goal. She kind of gives him something to start with, at least, yeah.
That's what school should be, trying to figure out this stuff.
Trying to better yourself.
Where you gotta go into school and knowing exactly how your next decade of your life is gonna plan out. You gotta be, your fucking career ladder, what you're gonna follow.
Oh, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years or whatever the fuck? Yeah, that kind of shit.
I just wanna go to the prom. I just wanna go to the Debs.
Just don't wanna get eaten by demons. I mean, other things.
And after that conversation is over, then Alice can no longer keep Clara out the room, and they end up inside the room.
That battle is fucking class as well. It's not like cool, it's really fucking funny, like where she turns into a wheel and he's like holding her back.
And then because she's spinning around and she has loads of heads, because it's the cartoon thing of it spinning, and then when he stops her, then she then just splits into loads of little Claras.
It was a vending machine of a pocket to brain him with.
Yeah, like, that's one of her killer
for
moves.
A hammer or like a comedy matter. No, just a vending machine. We've seen that before. We know that's in there.
We know the effectiveness of it. Yeah.
But then the subtlety of the animation with Amelie as she's constantly hiding the manga from the pair of them.
Yeah, they bust in and just like, hey, he's our friend. Back the fuck off, is Clara. It's just like, I'm watching. I did like, Asmodee is kind of going like, oh, I'm fucking sorry, I fucked up. And then like the inner voice is like, I didn't even find out what the fuck they're talking about. Oh my God. So it's double failure for him.
Not privy to the master's secrets.
dear.
Then we get to they've got to pick their electives So Aruba's like, he's going to just do the lecture series. They won't have to stand out that way. So,
he wants to improve himself, but he doesn't want to stand out by improving himself, even though that's a thing that you would do to improve yourself. He's like, listening down to lectures, that's easy. You're just sitting there, and yeah. Asmodeus is like, oh, you're doing that one, I'm doing that one too.
Yes. then, what are you doing, Clara? And then she's circled the succubus lessons over and over and over again. And Alice is like, oh, you poor child, I didn't realize you couldn't read.
Oh, that's so good. It's fucking excellent. And she's like, I know exactly what the fuck I'm doing. Fuck all y'all. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And she, so, yeah, she's going to the all-girls succubus class where they yes. learn about how to deal with boys.
No boys allowed.
How to like bend men to your will.
Yeah. But it also your one's heart-shaped eyes are really freaking me out, though. Yeah. That's an odd one.
But by the end, I guess the idea is also it's like acknowledging your own femininity.
Yeah, it's more like a growth, internal growth thing. It's not just about controlling other people. It's about growing better as a person, which, again, school life, yeah.
And there's more than one kind of...
attractiveness.
Effortiveness or appeal. Or like, yes. There's something out there for everybody. I mean, the dinosaur, dragon girl, she's like really good at makeup. She's right up there. But very tall girl in the misfit class, she's just like, well, she's just got it going on. It's just kind of, she's like an actual... Ice Dog Girl has like some unknowable sexiness that can't be seen before prime time. For
like a lewd level of percentage. I think the way Clara was like, what do I teach? 100%? 100%. It's 100%, right? Three digits. Gotcha.
You should be like, you know, she's like, you know, being a succubus at a college level. It's amazing.
Yeah, because the one who's got the crush on Arumakun is like disappointed that she's 41% because she was trying really hard.
She's 40, and I think so is the one with the glasses is quite low
she's
as well, like 50, because they're both,
just above average.
It's because they're both very shy that, like, they don't put themselves out there. They're not very assertive.
Well,
I mean, like,
yes,
yeah.
We'll see with the girl with the glasses. There is something else going on there.
Sure.
So she's, don't worry, the lowest I've ever had to deal with is 21%, and I managed to get them up. And then she looks at Clara. It's 2%, but then we get.
Oh, there. My devil.
Man, I like the way they realize, it's like, wait a minute, we can't keep, like, taking the Lord's name in vain. The demons wouldn't do that. Oh, got it. It's a good catchphrase, and I'm glad they're sticking with it now.
So you're only allowed, like, the appropriate levels of, textbooks.
Because someone's trying, the eyeball girl's like, I got fucking, like, year two's fucking textbooks. It's like, no, you gotta work your way up to that. It's okay.
But I'm cover to cover.
but yeah, Clara leaves this massive stack of textbooks to even get her on the road.
To get caught up to level one, yeah.
Yeah, she's never seen anybody stuff. So innocent.
Well, God's
more
sake,
innocent than a baby.
Devil's sake, please bathe. I'm sick.
So what's the thing she does? She's got a pose.
Do a sexy pose. You can just kind of
do a pose to get their attention.
Give them a baby.
What was it? There was like something about some interaction thing.
Touching.
Oh, touching. It's like very subtle. Put a hand on the shoulder and it's like, hey, how's it going?
Whereas she just latches onto him and he's like, oh, do you want a piggyback?
Mm. Well, where something that shakes a bit, you know.
Yes.
You know, a little wiggle going on there. She puts on like a giant pom-pom. Or a big ball of tinsel or something.
The makeup is, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's about what you expect.
Too much, perfume.
Everything.
Well.
I did like the perfume thing where she's reading the book. It's like perfume to get their attention. And she just like horror, like just entirely stinks to the point where they can't even see her because of the stink. And then she kind of reads later in the book. It's like, but don't use too much because that'll put them off. And she's like, I should have read ahead.
What was a fine print?
Literally the next line. She just dunked herself in fucking perfume before she read the second line of that. Yeah.
But yes, it doesn't work and she's completely bummed out. And so she goes home, and then we meet her family, and they all have a, like, they expect her to be her usual energy, and it's not going to happen, so her mum gives her a kiss, and they all break out in song.
Didn't expect the musical number, was appreciative of the musical number.
It was
great.
That was
pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, it was nice.
It kind of explains her as a character if her family suddenly breaks into a song now and again.
Well, it's well, you know, it's really nice. Everyone, you're right, family. You know, I shouldn't be getting down on myself. I got your family who loves me for who I am, and I love all you too. And I'm completely open about that. Maybe I can be just open about who I love in school as well. A plan.
Yeah, the teacher tries to convince her to use this special perfume, but she's having none of it. Showing that, for a demon, Clara is, very honourable, as well as being very innocent. She's not going to reduce, she's not going to, force.
She's not going to cheat her way, because, yeah, this is like 100% effective, like, magic potion. She's like, no, I prefer to improve as a person.
So her plan is to do all five things she did which went wrong at the same time.
Can't fail. Oh, we do get, the Connor and Murph fucking in this as well. They're apparently alive, their eyes move, and they did walk for her while she's doing the, the
tank the poles. Yeah. Just drives towards them.
Dear. But yeah, all the things at once, doesn't work surprisingly. Would you fucking believe?
The trick was to let him come to her. Cause she's out in the hills, she's feeling a bit down on herself, or maybe a little bit. And then he comes up and says, hey Clara, what's wrong?
There's one point I think where he uses a line which has been out of the comic he was reading to Amelie as well. Not intentionally, I think it's just because it's in his head.
Yeah, because he's been reading through all the volumes of the things that was worked on. Yeah,
he's like coming down to her, it's getting dark out, this isn't a play camp, it's a girl wants to be out alone at night, and she goes,
You see me as a girl. Gotcha, motherfucker. I charmed you with my feminine wiles. And he's like, no, that's just like a line that you're supposed to say in this kind of situation, right?
Because
because he read it somewhere.
No, the reason he was worried is because it was very isolated, and if she had an injury, no one would have found her. That was.
Yeah. Like, he has a practical reason for
it. Yes, but no, I think that it's either that line or another line is straight out of, or both maybe, straight out of the books. But it never feels like he's saying it because, it's just because it's in his mind at the time.
He just has concerned brothers, he's thinking about them, but that's what is, you know, naturally lend itself to being a compassionate and caring individual.
But,
it's just what people need to hear.
But her response and declaring that she's gonna make him fall head over heels for her, he mentions that briefly caused a badump in his heart.
Because she used the exact same line earlier, but it was more so in her crazy, like, I'm going to make you fall for me! And it's like, okay, that was a weird thing to say. But in this case, she's saying it, like, calmly and confidently, and confidence is an attractive thing. And the teacher's like, oh, shit, she's gone up to 10%. That's good.
And as well, like, just her sort of brand of romance that was very chaste and very pure, that's still a kind of romance in itself. That had to be full on. Hey, baby, wants to kind of wiggle. there's lots of different layers, and there's lots of different things that work for everybody. And you know, like, hopefully you find somebody out there what's left for you.
It's weird that this episode manages to do the whole, like, really crazy, wacky comedy stuff, but actually have, like, the character growth be part of that. It combines it really nicely, yeah.
Yeah. And the post-credits thing is the Owl Boy getting kicked out of the class again.
Because he did want to go in, and he did sneak in, and he did get kicked out already in the episode.
He just wants to know.
I like the way it only came up when she was asking. It's like, okay, girl, you meet a cute boy, and he looking for his class. What do you do? And, you know, I was like, oh, I'll show him to the class. I was like, I'm too shy to talk to him. And Clara's like, I'm going to go bang, zoom, whoo. And then this guy's like, cute boy. I'll just fucking pass him out, whatever. That's how we discover him in the class. That was great.
We also see them at home as well, and Clara sleeps very well at night. She's all been hyperactive all day. Rubicon sleeps very well at night because he spent the entire day trying not to be killed, so he just can rest easy. Then Asmodeus is just kind of thinking, oh, what would a master do? What's the master up to right now? He tosses and turns all night.
That's a good bit, yeah.
Poor guy.
Oh yeah, and the reason why the second attempt fails is because Rubicon's natural crisis evasion thing kicks in.
Yeah, she's coming at him with all the fucking things at 100%, and it's like, well, he's the best at dodging everything at 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, this episode. I can't remember what they were promising next week.
Training to know, but I guess they're going out into the deadly fighting arena.
They're in some sort of dodgeball volleyball type thing with murder involved.
You know, I can't remember what the fuck, the big lad,
Knock.
Yeah, he was again just being a really good background character in this. I feel like he was being climbed on again.
He was being climbed on again, yes.
Yeah. I just enjoy when he shows up and offers actually sensible advice.
Yeah, I believe he did as well this episode, Clara.
That seems to be his fucking thing. It's like, oh, this guy's got a good head in his shoulders despite being a fucking idiot. Cool.
Then we got My Hero Academia, season 4, episode 69, An Unpleasant Talk.
Yeah, and boy, did they talk.
Yes. Talk and talk.
Exposition.
It's not like it's a poorly named episode then, yeah.
There's a lot of character work as well, but.
There is
that's true, yeah.
But man, they're just jumping, okay, here's the plan, here's the investigation we've been doing for many months at great length.
When all the kids are like, hey guys, you all got out on your work assignment too? It's like, weird. Oh, let's go down to the same thing. Oh, weird. We're turning at the same corner. Weird. We're on the same train. This is weird. Like, put it together.
I know. They did the meeting too, and it's like, say, okay, this is like, no, based on the evidence, we can all come to one conclusion. It's like, oh, the rest of the room is going, oh my God, the bastards. And then the kids are going, what? I don't get it.
Well, I think with Kirishima, it's supposed to be like, cause it's not that he's a bit thick, but he's not really on it. But also, I don't think they can visualize anything that fucking horrible. I think is the thing it's trying to get across. Yeah.
But still. But
obviously obviously Midoriya and, our other boy are kind of like know exactly what the fuck's going on because of their direct involvement. But the other guys are like, wait, what? I don't draw this together. It's like, cause it's really fucked up.
It is. A school in the country, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. So the fucked up thing is, that they believe that Overhaul is creating these quirk negating bullets out of his own daughter, who may not be his daughter, but
yeah, because they know how his power works, and yes. They state as much, and they're like, okay, so it's a variation of that,
yeah,
because they are talking about Eraserhead is there as well, and they were talking about how his power works, and it's like, yeah, but my power doesn't work exactly like that, and they're like, we think this is basically that her blood is being used to make bullets, which is, that's fucked up.
Yeah. It is. I do remember seeing that in the early issue of Warren Ellis's run on Excalibur. I think it's like power negating bullets in that, and they discover they're like made out of teeth. And they have to go and they discover they're being made out of other mutants, I think.
What, like Caliban or something like that, isn't it?
I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah. Or if you want, like an example, people might have seen widespread to their chagrin. They have the X-Men 3 film where they make the bullets out of
leech. Oh, yeah, sure. Hmm.
So and the rest of the kind of story here is we've got Tagata and Deku are like, they're racked with like, oh shit, we should have saved that girl.
If only we'd done something then. And yeah, like Night Eye is kind of like saying, like, listen, I take it on board because that's what I fucking told you to do. And we wanted more information to basically, we want to increase our chances to close to 100% to save that girl. And in that situation, it's possible you and her would have been killed.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough for
him. His point is we can't be All Might. We have to plan because we're not All Might. Because Fat Gum is like, why don't we just bust straight in here and now?
Yeah.
This guy will fucking kill you. That's why. Because we know of his powers, he can dissemble matter and reassemble matter. He doesn't have to do the reassembly part later if he doesn't want to. And that's as well when Midoriya and Mirio see, oh, we could have been fucking obliterated there in the alley back the other day.
Yeah.
Kind of drops from him then as well.
But even then, they're still kind of like beating themselves up over not saving that kid.
And we got that. There's so many new characters, but there's the one guy who gets to talk a lot. He's like
the guy with like the keys and the
rock lock contributes nothing but negativity to this discussion.
Why are these kids here? Yeah.
It's like
because
even,
they're all
even,
witnesses
even
to
when,
the crimes. Like,
even
basically.
When they move on to different parts of the presentation, he keeps coming back. Okay, I get that part. Why are these kids here? It's like, shut up.
That's because they don't. Well, to be fair, Kirishima seems to not understand a single thing which is going on throughout the episode.
But Kirishima is here because if he didn't get hard, they wouldn't have had a sample of the bullet to analyze afterwards.
He's absolutely integral to this. He is a witness to the shit that went on. Obviously, the other kid there, and he goes like, no, don't worry about it. Check it out. Cowhoof. I'm good.
Yeah.
I got better.
But,
Also, his quirk means that he probably would be well suited to any sort of planet Gigantic, because he can just like toughen his skin up, and then he can't be depowered by the bullets.
Yeah, exactly. He's the kind of guy like this. He's the right guy for this situation as well.
But yeah, he does come across as like a little in over his head, more than the others. Yeah.
Part of it seems to be like innocence, because obviously like Froppy and Rarika don't know what exactly the kid's involvement was with it as well, but Hiroshima is presented a lot more as kind of being stupid rather than just innocent and in the thing. Yeah. And I'm getting there trying to say it's like he's in well over it, because he's just a kid, a student, and he's in like in deep now. But it does make him look a little dumb.
But at the same time, it also makes you, but because of the way Fat Gum acts, that you then also go, well, yeah, it makes sense that Fat Gum's the guy for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
the action guy, sure.
Well, it's a kind of guy who doesn't dive in, dive in and put his body on the line to save him. because he can take it, but no one else can.
In a different regard, but yeah, basically Fat Gum's the right fucking guy to be teaching Kirishima.
Mm. Yeah, and Fat Gum comes across as like a younger hero than some of the ones we've met so far.
Again, like he doesn't have as much of a stake in it, because everyone else that's invited here are heroes to the locality that that your man's gang is working in, so it won't draw attention to what they're doing. But Fat Gum, like, and your man's like, why the fuck is Fat Gum here? It's like, because Fat Gum's fucking involved, and Fat Gum wants to be involved, wants to stop this.
Yeah, 29 according to the wiki is how old he is. That kind of feels right.
Okay.
I've said that. I mean, apparently Eraserhead's like only 2 years older than him, so.
Eraserhead's been through some shit, though, man.
Yes.
When you turn 30 in a manga, and you're basically dead anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm. I wonder how old Night Eye is supposed to be.
19 years old, I don't know.
Yeah, and we also get the thing of Night Eye and Gran Torino. Like, Gran Torino's obviously was encouraged Midoriya to come here in an attempt to get Night Eye to make up with.
Another way, Kirishima's stupid, because Kirishima's like, whoa, Midoriya knows a lot of fucking important motherfuckers here.
Yeah, and Night Eye admits that, Deku's like a lot, he's got the same sort of madness deep in him that he couldn't understand in All Might.
That probably bugs him more than, he seems like a good fit, but I don't understand why All Might did what he did, so that still bugs me. It still irks me.
38 is Night Eye.
Oh, he's so old, super old.
Oh man, we have grandchildren by now. God.
I'm just counting. Am I that next year? Fuck.
sorry, in my rear view mirror.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Gran Torino, I think. It's
fucking... Yeah, there's our own model. But Eraserhead, you know, just put up, Midoriya now as well, and saying, okay, I know how you can get. I know you're fucking feeling right now. You get this fucking reckless streak, as Night Eye points out back in the meeting. However, you're gonna be falling in Paris. You can't be doing that, right? You gotta stick to the plan. You gotta bring this guy in by the book. By the book. You gotta be a good cop, Maria. You feel me? And that's also as well, like, you know, you have to resolve for it. And while I'm around, if you fight, I'll have to handle it again. I can just, like, negate your power. And I'll be fine, but don't put me in a position where I have to do that either.
It's like a combination of like a threat and I want you to do better. It's an encouraging threat, if that makes sense.
Yeah. He hasn't completely like, put his trust back in Midoriya yet, but also recognizes as my duty as like a hero trying to raise up the, like, lower younger rights, and as an educator, I should be using this as a teaching moment.
Hmm.
From the meeting, basically they're gonna spy on all the locations that they know.
See if they can find out where she is being held, and like get as much information as they can, and then hit it hard.
Yeah,
yeah. Do we have like kind of an idea of like, you know, well, there's kind of a pretty big scarce like network of supply chain. We can't really kind of narrow it down, but we can see the point. If they did this company on that same day, so we might be able to like bring them in that way and follow those leads. We might be able to find the main hideout where presumably they're holed up in.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the lock kind of guy is like, hey, you can, well, I actually raise her head first. Like, you can see the future. Why don't you see the future and find out where she is? And he's like, yeah, I can't do that. I'll lay it all out here. Here's my power works. You know, and he works on like one person for like an hour really effectively in 24 hours. And it takes 24 hours to reset or something like that, is it?
It is.
You can, yeah.
Or you can only hold it on one person for 24
hours. No, you can only do it every 24 hours and you can do it for an hour. He gets basically a flashback.
And he only gets their perspective as well.
A future flashback of their perspective for an hour.
Yes. They're all just like, well, just get all of us and see if any of us spot him so we know when we're going to spot him. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to look too far into your future because I might see if you fucking get killed. And that's not a thing I can do or want to do anymore.
And they're like, oh, well, no, we'll just defy death. And he's, I don't know if you can defy death. So I'm assuming the only person he's done that to is All Might. And then everyone just slowly figures out in their own heads.
He's seen what happens.
At least all the experienced heroes seem to do, from their responses.
Because, they don't go like, oh, come on, just try it. They're just like, oh, that's why you don't do it, because you did do it, and we know who you did it on.
Yeah. As well, do you know what causality is? Because now you've got a future event. Everything you do to avoid it will fulfill the conditions to cause that event to happen because you've seen the future. So now you know about it. It's now part of the past or the present, and then that will become the future. So not knowing is a lot easier because if there's a fate anyway, then so be it. At least you won't like live out your remaining time like obsessed and in fear of trying to avoid a horrible fate. Mm-hmm. If you meet your fate, then so be it. Maybe by not knowing, you might be able to avoid it somehow. But if he looks in the future for anybody, that just kind of sets it in place. It can't be avoided.
I did appreciate that, like, all the experience heroes, including fucking Negative Nancy over there, we're kind of like all like, oh shit, okay, let's not push you on this, because this is clearly a really sticking point. And even though they're trying to save a kid, it's like, yeah, I can see how that's super fucked up that happened. They don't want to push him into it again.
Yes. But we've saved a lot of people without having future sight powers. But before, so we'll have to, to do it again this time. And we'll come up with a plan. That's what we do. We're heroes.
Yeah.
And then after the credits, we get to see Eri with her new guardian, who seems to be more worried than Eri is.
Because the last guy, he fucked up. And that's probably not good for him. We probably can figure out what happened.
Well,
you're right. We saw what happened to him. And he's like, I bought you that new doll. You haven't taken it out of the package. Come on, I'm your buddy. Oh, please, please be happy, small child. I will be killed if you're not happy.
Balls would have my ass for this, literally.
Yeah.
And then we get like a Pretty Cure reference. As he wonders, maybe that's what she likes. Because, apparently Overhaul has given him orders to use the carrot, not the stick.
Make her want to stay rather than, like, force her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like the depictions of, like, Midoriya and Muren's depictions of Overhaul, where he's, like, the Plague Doctor mask is turning into a beak and, like, the kind of evil feathers and, like, you know, turning him into a monstrous thing in their mind. Good visualization.
Then counter to that then as well, Ares has a recollection of Midoriya and how it gives him a more depth to the kind of hand she's kind of familiar with now, is kind of hand that's called grabbing her or doing ill to her. And the first kind of like touch of first like human contact where it hasn't been to fucking beat her or the spoiler or somebody who was like, a safe, firm hand that made her feel safe and comforted.
The way he held her was like with conviction, and the way he talked to her was with like real emotion. When he spoke with anger and that kind of thing, it was for her benefit, and he was worried about her actual feelings and her being hurt. Whereas this guy's like, hey, come on, I'm your friend, I bought you dollies. You know, it's like none of it's real, and she's getting upset that that's the only decent person she's ever met.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to another form of child exploitation. It's Vinland Saga, episode 19. United Front. As we get more fighting between Thorfinn and Thorkell, we get some of Thor's and Thorkill's shared past as well.
Mm.
And, as we learn, like, the events of when Thor's, is it Helga?
Helga, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I forgot what the daughter's name is.
It's been
so long since she's been in it. Anyway, as a baby, they were fleeing the Jorms Viking, compound. They'd wanted Thor's to be the leader. Thor's had, they thought he died, but then he returned 3 days later.
dear. Obviously he's like, they basically take like a break, like in a boxing match. I did like that, where he goes into his corner, he's like, listen, kid, you can't wear him down like that. And he's like, shut up, you're the guy I want to kill. And he's like, no, listen to me. And even Thorkell, like, sitting on a bench and everything.
We got the chair, like, yeah. Who carried all the way out to the back of beyonds of England with him? I don't know.
I mean, like, he's big enough that if Thorkell says, carry my chair with you in case I want to sit down, you fucking do it. But yeah, he's kind of reeling. Hey, I'm your, what was it, great uncle?
I'm your wacky great uncle, Thorkell.
Yeah, because he's man's uncle, so that's great uncle. Yeah.
We get like the younger version of him, and
I know everyone's younger version is just them, but with a shittier beard.
He's got a good beard. He's just trying to grow in the rest of the stash to join it up.
It's the stash that's the worst part. You're right.
but yeah, the key things here are like Thor's eyes is a recurring thing because he comments that Thorfinn doesn't have his eyes, but then he sees the eyes of Thor's in Canute later, The way the unarmed Thor's beats Thorkell. I'd forgotten that scene, and that way of fighting happens a lot much further down in the comic.
Nice, because it looks rad as shit.
Viking karate.
I'm gonna karate chop your axe. How do you like that?
Yeah, there's one really bad line in there where this, like, battles aren't like shogi. Is the literal line and the translation.
Yes. Yeah, because, I mean, like, Thorkell shouting, Saki, you know, it's like, and it being translated to bring me wine or whatever. And I was fine. That's okay.
But that's okay. But, like, in Japanese, sake or sake means any
alcohol beverage. Drink, basically. Yeah. Drink.
Drink. Come here, drink.
Yeah, it's fine. But, like,
saying shogi out loud. Yeah. It wasn't like rendering themselves as chess or something like that. No.
Yeah. That would have made more sense. Especially like in England and everything.
Also, the Danes and Vikings, they had like a chess-like game.
It's in the opening, so I'm not sure why they didn't, like, again.
I feel it's just a, slip up.
You're probably right, yeah.
Or, a line that you wouldn't have put in the comic now, but it might have been in there now. But I don't remember. I'm sure it was translated differently in the English version of the comic.
Mm.
This isn't Monopoly, kid. You can't be just going out.
This isn't Cards Against Humanity, kid. Well, actually, no, it kind of is.
This ain't D&D, and you ain't no rogue.
And your berserker's already been taken out by the cleric. Yeah, and so then they get back to fighting, and, they do the old razzle-dazzle on him because Ashglad remembered a battle where he saw, Thorkell go down.
Like, lose his footing, like, just slip in, and, like, he didn't lose the battle, but he didn't fall over. So this is how you get him, kid.
Get him right in the, sock him in the ear. I don't know, is that because...
I think it was the teeth, wasn't it?
Did he have like a glass jaw or some kind of inner ear problem where he just fucking...
Yeah, I think it's... I thought it was the ear, because I thought they blinded him to keep him off balance and he wouldn't see Thorfinn kick him in the ear and then gouge his eye out.
Yeah.
The gouge the eye out was when he was unconscious. It was just like, fuck you! And then even your hands were like, oh, you got him down! You got him down! Just fucking walk away! We're good!
I can't tell but think when asked that I had him, okay, getting hold of him. Here's a plan, okay. What we're gonna do is I'm gonna blind Thorfinn, blind Thorkell, like, with the sword, and you're gonna get him. Then Thorfinn's like, okay, blind Thorkell, gotcha. Are you listening, Thorfinn? Yes, it's blind Thorkell. You got, is this plan? Okay, go!
He did say, literally kick him in the head and then blind him, right? It wasn't blind him and then kick him. No, it must have been the other way around.
Blind him, stab him, hung, drawn, quartered. How many other ways can kill a guy? I know 8.
Yeah. And Thorkell's men were fine with him whack kicking him in the head.
Well, all he did was knock him on his ass, yes. And it was like, oh, they knocked him down.
Impressed with that. They were not impressed.
When he jumped on him and digging his out his eye with his thumb, it was like, hey, hold on, that's fine.
Hey, come on. Hey, don't do that to a dude.
And so,
if he shoots a knife, he'll be putting digging your dirty paw in his eye socket.
Yeah.
Get an infection that way.
Yeah, so they're planning on killing Thorfinn. Thorkell's getting up. He's getting mad at his own men. And then, Canute wanders in, with the brother, who then rushes.
All the Vikings were like, haha, now we have you, Canute. And Canute's like, whatever. I don't fucking care.
Yes, and then basically Canute has to sort these Vikings out. I can't remember what the line is, but it's like basically tells Thorkell that he's gotta show his men his pride, and that drives Thorkell mad because he knows that, and he just doesn't want to hear it from somebody else.
I think he literally says, it's like, I don't need you to tell me what I already fucking know. I was gonna do that anyway. I totally lost that fight, and it's really frustrating for me because I'm the biggest guy here.
And well, Canute is doing this whole thing about sort of this fucking like death is meaningless, you know, and it's only about what we can achieve in this world while you're still alive. So if I die, I die, but I'm gonna do what I can when I'm still alive. If I die,
Canute just points it out.
I've heard a lot of men say that, but they don't care about your lives near at all. They cower at the first punch you're gonna get. You're gonna fucking get it right now, you little punk, and then woof, giant fists, death punch, doesn't even blink when it goes right up in his face. So I'm thinking, this kid's got some balls.
Yeah, he's kind of looking him in the eyes. He's like, I hate those fucking eyes, but I want to see what they do.
Yes.
Because I regret, that's one of my few regrets where I didn't follow Thor's that day. Because it's like, what did those eyes lead to? What and is the path of a true warrior?
You know as well, that's where he's talking about something that he's missing. And he thought, that's it. He's seen they both see the world for what it is. As you can see, the code in the Matrix, man, and I can't do that.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be Thorkell's tragedy, is that he's never going to be able to, because we know that it's giving up fighting is the thing. Or at least, not just giving up fighting, but like...
Fighting for the right thing, basically?
No, just wanting to create a better world, I think, is the thing.
I would have said like fighting to make a better life and world. Yeah,
but Thor's way of doing it is to lay down arms, and whereas we're going to see that Canute's is the opposite. He's going to give these people who want to fight all the time specific people to fight,
and that will make the world better.
Yes,
they'll die for a good fucking reason. Which is the best he can do with these crazy ass Vikings.
Yeah, and as well, if they want to die anyway, at least they'll die fulfilled on the battlefield as they wish, but also they will have subjugated this kingdom and, everybody's going to be living in peace. So, it's a win-win.
Can you, straight up go into him and is like, I know you want to, ransom me to my dad, but he wants me dead, so not much good to you, might as well let me off. He lays it all out and I'm basically going like, I am useless as a hostage, so I am totally up for killing.
Yes.
So he completely de-weaponizes himself, but basically by making himself entirely open, everyone kind of works for him now.
His first thing though was, give me your sled and let me take my two men here.
Containers.
He's got nothing to lose. He's literally a running crazy maverick with nothing to lose.
That's working out for him,
And so Thorkell's like the cut of your jib. I've been on this plan. I was going to fight King Sven anyway.
So this works out for me. If you're going to fight, if you're going to that place, he's like, where are you going after this? If I let you live, and he's like, I'm going to go to this place, raise an army, fight my dad for the throne.
Well,
and Thorkell's like, I was going to fight him anyway.
Yeah, he's not going to fight him because we'll see exactly what he's going
to. Yeah, do. Yeah. Well, he's going to Gainsborough.
He's going to Gainsborough. Yes, because he points out that because. There's two of them. That's what's caused, because Sven's got two sons, that's causing Sven problems, which is why he sent Canute out to die in battle.
In a futile battle that he would lose.
It's because there are supporters for the pair of them still.
Yeah.
And that's what's causing him, Sven, political problems.
Yeah. So, and you can't just assassinate him.
Because he's dividing his own, people among his, his successors, whereas he's like, if I just had one successor, there'd be no division.
And yeah, Ashglad's like, Thorfinn's still getting mad, but Ashglad's like, no, this is it. This is the thing. He starts laughing. And
Thorkel's like, why is that guy still there? Why are these guys still here? I said they could fucking leave once they beat me. has he gone crazy or something? And Ashglad does a baller move of his fucking own.
Yeah. I kill Ragnar. Kill me if you want to, but I'm willing to work.
If you let me live, I will work for you to make you the king.
I'll die for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and the pragmatic mask of Canute slips for an instant. He thinks about it for a second there, but then just turns his face away. Thing. If you want to fucking do some good, you're gonna fucking do it in his name.
Yeah, I think he says you'll mourn him by working for me, working towards that goal.
Yeah, it's basically he's the new Ragnar now, so he's gonna do everything that he would have had Ragnar do. Like, and
I love Thorkill's thing of like, don't fucking copy me, dude.
Yeah, you get your own thing.
We can't all work. I said I was going to work for him first, and as a child, fucking Ascalad's like, no, I said I was working for him first, actually.
Thorkell is 50 years old, ladies and gentlemen.
He's looking good. He's a good 50.
Well, that age is important. Guys with any business will keep you fit.
That age will be important for later on, knowing that age, because I don't think I've said it yet, but it's like you can only be. You can't be the leader of the Orms Vikings after you're over 50. I can't remember if they said that, but that's a plot point later on. But that probably explains why Thorkell at this point is just doing whatever the fuck he pleases.
he's old enough that he can do whatever he wants. Yeah.
Well, there's nowhere for him to go in the organization, so that's probably why he's broken off on his own. And
so did Thorkell just get that by default then?
Well, there's a big old arc coming up way down the line about the leadership of the Orms Vikings, yes.
Okay.
But yeah, that's another important. There's like, it's so good. I say, once either you need more of this and want to read the comic, it's worth coming back to this because you spot stuff that I wouldn't have spotted first time reading through the comic. And
I must take up reading it again whenever this is done. I got a fair bit past this. I think there was just all that was out at the time, and then I just never got back around to it again.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe I didn't get pick up that 3 days thing until I said it out loud. I was like, okay, yeah, that's more Christianity. yeah, I think we get
the Viking being more Christian than the guy who's a Christian.
Yeah. We'll get Canute's speech about God, I think, next episode.
I feel like I could be wrong about this. Maybe I'm fucking going ahead of myself, but I feel like he's kind of like being for God, but he's actually anti-God. God's a piece of shit, basically.
Well, no, he's just got a more complicated. I think he's. You'll see. He explains it fairly sensibly. And it ties into the thing of him, of Thorkell seeing Thor's eyes when he stares in Canute's eyes.
I mean, like, much not as I enjoyed My Hero Academia this week, like, this was a really good amount of, like, characters talking and working out their own individual stuff. Really, really, really good stuff.
Oh, so you stat that guy real good.
Yeah.
That's true. There was a little bit of fighting in there. So.
It's like the adults and Canute sorting their shit out, and then Thorfinn just steadfastly refusing to sort his shit out.
He's like, what the fuck are you all talking about? I'm in it to murder people. That's all I'm here for.
Fucking arm is bent up at a right angle, you little shit.
when he tries to point at Thorkell with the fucking arm, that's just like, ugh. That was nasty.
because I was worried that coming out of this season that people won't really take to when it comes back. But I feel like because Thorfinn is less of the main character towards the end of this story, that will help the transition, I think.
Like, he's been our point of view character to some extent, but he's not the guy who's changing through the course of the plot, really.
No, he's...
Yeah.
He was changed at the start for the worse.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's remained worse with occasional flickers of, oh, I'm doing the wrong thing, and then going, I'm going to carry on doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, not learning from anything, whereas everyone else is learning and changing as they go. Yeah.
Yeah. Which means when it gets to season two, if there's a season two, then that's when his learning and changing starts.
Okay, cool.
Because it was like, I don't think there's enough to make you go, oh, I want to see Tiny Fighter Thorfinn, and that to be the only thing I want to see of him. I feel like that's not, that's less of the focus now, that when you go out of the series, it's not gonna, you're not gonna miss it when it's not there anymore.
Right, right.
Though I believe it's wrapping up soon, the comic. They did a massive time skip from what I read.
Okay.
And it's in its final arc. So I don't know whether the comic's going to end well or not.
I mean, they tend to, a lot of these endings seem to be very violent and quick. So, yeah.
But this,
well, just, go that way.
There's many denouements along the whole story anyway. So you've got another kind of satisfying smaller endings rather than one big classic dramatic one.
Exactly.
So, on those merits, it's enough of a great comic.
Oh yeah,
this, I know some people hate like the smaller ending fucking thing, but I think it's a lot more satisfying overall. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this season I think will be very satisfactory.
Okay.
Because the story it tells is very satisfactory.
And
then we've got Tokusatsu stuff did come out just in time for me to talk about it. We got Rear Solga episode 35, Earth's Greatest Decisive Battle. This is only episode 35. There's like another 12 episodes.
Even Jay Rubble went to the end.
Yeah. So essentially, as I suspected, the others have to go and do their training on the cliffs as well. Apparently they don't have to worry about the space dragon because all they need to do is convince Mosa Rex to come out of the sea and combine with one of the air Dinonites, of which they've only got one, and one of the earth Dinonites, of which they've got probably 10 or so at this point. And that will be the ultimate combination. When they get to the cliffs, Green and Black have already finished their tests. Handling, and then the others have to do so. Melto Blue is on like a trapeze above the earth, and he's got to walk on the bridge to safety, and he goes, I can't see any bridge, and if you fall you'll die. Pink's got to catch an insect which is bothering her. Canelo has to build a house of cards without being distracted. The distractions, of course, are pretty women who want to marry him.
Of course.
And Ko is, Asuna, that's the name of the pink, I couldn't remember earlier. Ko has no enemy to fight. He has to realize the problem within to escape, which ironically he does not. It takes him to hallucinate or be visited by the ghost of Master Red to actually totally explain what he needs to do. Which is, he's got to stop thinking of himself as being the strongest he could be. And so basically he has to fight the new strongest form and discover its weakness and then realize that he's not as strong as he thinks. And then, of course, when Precious uses that ability that Precious had got last episode of copying that power, he can then defeat Precious. And, or at least temporarily, Precious does survive. But then the super dinosaur, space dinosaur turns up. They do the ultimate combination. New music plays because it's that powerful a combination. They shoot the dinosaur into space. Or do they throw it? They throw it, I think. Kick it. They did a lot of things to it. Once it's in space, then they do, what's the name of this attack? I've got to find it here. It has a ridiculous name. It's like the biggest attack they can do so far. And of course, we've learned from this episode that you just get bigger. King Dino Knight Rex, Big Bang Evolution is the attack. In which every single dinosaur fires a beam at him and knocks him into the moon, causing a giant crater in the moon. Then they all go and have drinks at the cafe that the elders started. And then they all notice that Melto is the only one who's got a fancy cocktail drink. And Kaneno's like, did my sister give me that goddamn drink? Give me that drink here. And then they all laugh. Ha 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 ha. And then I go, ah, God, the guy who plays Ko really has an uncomfortable laugh when he's acting laughing. But maybe that's his real laugh, and that's just how it is.
Very unfortunate.
Anyway, next episode, Toa, the green guy, gets a cute girlfriend.
Probably a monster trying to get him.
I'm assuming that is probably the case. There was also some monster soap opera where Wizaru was like, I'm not going to do what Precious tells me. That's not the kind of guy I am. Even though Precious has got my heart trapped inside a card. I'd rather not know when I'm going to die, unlike the other guy whose name I can never remember, who is obediently obeying Precious at the moment. But probably just looking for an opportunity to grab that card and get his heart back. Meanwhile, in Kamen Rider 01, I have not watched the previous two episodes, so I just skipped straight to 12. apparently, an actor was shot by Little Assassin. The guys from the terrorist organization have now tied Little Assassin up because Little Assassin has got too powerful and has evolved too far. And at the start of this episode, he escapes the bindings that he's been put in. Because he's like, I'm not going to work for you anymore, because I can learn about assassination, and I'm going to go freelance. Meanwhile, because a human gear has shot an actor, I believe the actor was playing himself. I don't think he died, from what I was getting from the dialogue, but he was shot. They suspect hidden intelligence. This is a plot of the Zaya, because what I did learn is, like, previous episode, the guy from the Zaya was fully revealed and he was trying to buy hidden intelligence out. And then the cops can't find any evidence, but then, Kamen Rider Valkyrie, I can't remember her real name, she says, well, there's a secret lab though you've not seen. There might be some clues in there, because he foolishly showed her that, not knowing that she might actually be a baddie, or at least being misled by the baddie. So the cops turn up, demanding access to the lab. They don't want to give the access to the lab because they're currently generating another progress key. And so they're trying to delay them when a Huma Gear detective, an old model Huma Gear detective, shows up. And basically manages to delay the real detectives. And they start investigating and going back and forth. They've got this thing being printed off. This detective robot turns out to be the prototype for Izu, the secretary robot. And he was only going to get involved when things got too dangerous. And so now he's been informed, presumably by the satellite. I don't know. It's not quite clear where he got this information. And that is a part of the plot, because Izu's suspicious. Because this guy who she's never heard of, knows about the secret lab, knows that they were being investigated by cops, knows all sorts of details that he shouldn't, but it turns out that everything seems on the up and up. This is another creation of his grandfather's. It's the same model that his dad was, and so Aruto's, like, fairly happy to work with him. And, so he goes off trying to lead the cops away while they can figure out where the assassins got to. And they discover what was happening was that the terrorists had been buying Huma gears from these guys who had been stealing them and, basically, respraying them, giving them new faces. And they were supposed to be like entertainment robots for a cultural fair.
Wait, so like a chop shop, but for...
Yeah, chop shop for androids.
Okay.
And they bought four of them, and that's why the assassin one kept on coming back after he was defeated, because they just kept on loading him into a new one of these robots. And there's one which hadn't been captured, and Little Assassin himself was coming after it. They managed to save him, and Aruto gets there. The problem is he's evolving too fast, so their attacks don't work. And so he's going to use this new power-up. And he's about to use the power-up when the detective says, I don't think you should use that. You can just use this one that the cop dropped. And he doesn't pay attention. He listens to Izu instead and transforms into Shining Hopper, I think, form, which is the new form. And everyone seems to be impressed with this, even the guy who, the cop, the detective, who was like, I don't think that's right. But then that's the cliffhanger. We don't know where the fight's going next. The preview suggests it's going to go quite badly, because Izu seems to be suggesting in the preview that I'm not the right android to be your secretary. I'm going to switch myself off. So I'm going to guess that fight does not go right, and that the detective was correct in his thought that he should not use that power up. We shall see. The guy playing the detective is having the time of his life in this episode. He gets to really ham it up big time.
Does he have a cool red jacket and a hat like Robert did?
No, he does not. He has a tweed coat and a what they call deerstalker hat.
So wait, he's supposed to look old-fashioned because he's wearing fucking tweed. He's the old-fashioned robot who wears old-fashioned clothes.
Yeah, he's just like Sherlock
Holmes. Programmed to do.
But no, his things are like a headphones over his ears, as opposed to just like things sitting on the ears. Yeah, it was a good episode. I always think like, I think the actress playing Izu and the actor playing the Jin from the terrorists are probably the best people in it in terms of like nailing the tone and getting their characters right. She gets to play everything very deadpan. But her body movements of the android are top notch. And then, as I said before, the guy playing Jin is playing him as a 5-year-old. And that is a great choice. It's a really creepy choice. 5-year-olds with guns. Never a good thing. Any predicure from you, Niall?
I cop a little bit. I'm not completely up to date, but there have been some good episodes. The one lasted a while. They're fishing out the villains a lot more, which is much needed, and it's been all the better for it. So all the villains on this bit, and they're not Raiders, space pirates, they're all refugees, exiles, or outcasts, just kind of perpetuating the trauma that's been inflicted upon them, over and over again. So I had one there where you go to, you see a fortune teller, that Uni knows, to even get a beat on the twinkle imagination they're trying to find, which is essentially, as we find, just a more, a revelation or a moment of emotional clarity and compassion that just, it speaks to who you are inside yourself and inspires others around you, and then they can do the big super move at the end, which they need to unlock the real, real power that will defeat the bad guys at the very, very end. But do that to God, that will go to a lot of, be put through the emotional rigor, say. So they go to this fortune teller plan to meet this, like, old blind dude who coincidentally happens to be the likeness that Uni used as her disguise as the space cat man butler when she was with the space pirates. He's very vague and cryptic about, you know, what, his fortune telling acumen is, because he claims to tell them, fortunes by seeing stars. However, he's blind. He's more like, you know, asks you, what do you see in the stars? And then kind of extrapolates from there what your,
More like a cold read or something, yeah.
It's more like a therapist than a fortune teller, really. But Iwan shows up, who, was basically drummed out of not raiders for not killing them precures and as part of the bargain, get a fifth one into the mix as well, so it makes things even harder. And she's sworn revenge on Uni, then cure Cosmo to try and get back at them. But Uni similarly has sworn revenge, on Iwan for petrifying her entire planet. And to kind of, comes a moment of clarity and understanding of everyone saying, I'm just perpetuating the hatred the same way she does, because Iwan feels put out because, she was just an orphan living on the street, apparently, and she was just kind of brought in the space pirates, recognized for her scientific ability. And then I come in my disguise as Bakenya and as a translator, Meowster, so a space catman butler. And I became her confidant, I became her friend, and then, even though I was doing this for justice, I did betray her, and she was also drummed out of a place like that she had come to call home as well. And I'm just want to say, as you were about to fly at me in a robot that you made, I'm sorry for what I've done. Did I know how you must feel? I feel you feel pretty bad about this. Two wrongs don't make a right, dude. I can see like where you're coming from, because I've been to that same place before, and I know what this hatred you're feeling right now, but it won't do you no good, man. How about you and me together? We finally figure this out. And it almost kind of works. I can see Iwan doing a face turn probably later on down the line. Maybe many of them will as well. The other one I watched was Tenjo, the Tengu lady, is going to infiltrate the school, and Elaine Akira Soleil has been picked to do for part of an essay contest because she speaks English real good, amongst other languages, because her mother's an interpreter. But Tenjo is trying to like infiltrate the school as a teacher and try and coach her for this contest, but trying to get into her head. And he's got a nice essay about smiles, you know, are a big part of me and my family. You're smart, smiling each other in school, we welcome people into your life, and saying, nah, but don't you feel different? You know, you're from a mixed race family, you know, don't you feel like different to other kids around you? Trying to really get into her head for them. Just use that. Try and get into that real kind of negative emotion, you know, because no, things aren't so easy. A smile can just fix everything at all. And then they're just going, yeah, maybe you got a point there. Next day comes up then to do the essay contest, and Tenjo's plan backfires massively because he goes, well, I felt a lot different from other kids in my class when I was a kid, and I felt pretty sad about that. But I went home to my family and I saw that, yeah, we're different in many other ways, but everyone is. I mean, I'm from the mixed race family, you know, my dad's Mexican and my mother's Japanese, and got their own, like, weird thing going on. They're very embarrassing. They sing and dance in the street in front of me. But then as noticing, I'm different, but so is the tall kid over there, or the kid who runs really fast, or the girls in the books. Everyone's different in their own way, and they're good at their own thing. And Tina's like, shit! I've actually inspired her to greater heights. Damn it all, anyway. But Tenjo's kind of poking at kind of the naivete of them drilling fun. Smile, do you know what kind of world you live in? The smile can't like stop a war. Smile can't, you know, stop somebody from doing something terrible. And then again, another moment of kind of clarity. Well, maybe not, but like it's a good start, you know, by smiling somebody, by kind of being compassionate, you know, and being welcoming, maybe you can kind of like welcome somebody in from the bad place that they're in and try and help to heal them or get past it, or at least kind of comfort them for a little while. And that's like an interesting thing it's been taking a long time to get around to, but it's kind of coming more, less subtext now, more testable. Like the villain's kind of asking this, how do you square your sort of happy and comfortable life knowing that all the suffering going on in the world around you, like it may not be happening in your country or to anybody you know. Like maybe you can speak comfortably as I can here from an apartment in London where like I have food, I have shelter, but I know on the other side of the world, people are fucking dying and civil wars and famine and natural disasters and everything else. And how do you square, your comfortable life with that when knowing that's what's going on? No, again, because remember this is being posted, younger viewers watching this, you know, like you've got like a nice happy home, but you may have heard in the news or from your parents or overheard and talking to them about the world can be not so nice sometimes. And the heroes respond to that. We understand that, and we have to extend our hand in friendship and compassion and empathy with you. We may not fully understand where you're coming from. We haven't been what you've been through, but we want to understand. We want to help you and do what we can if you just let us do that. And it's a good kind of thing to convey across. No, again, Precure is all about, you know, trying to see the good, inspire the good, and be the good that you want to see in your fellow human beings. But this is like really trying to bring it up to, well, keep it more relevant to the modern world, because yeah, you will say the world's going to hell in the handbasket. How the hell do you like rationalize this? Well, you kind of have to just sort of get on with things and do your best and to best be good to other people. Otherwise it's going to go insane. You will be just drowning in negativity and mired in sorrow like the villains are. And you then have that negativity is contagious and you can pass it on or you can manifest in other ways. So yeah, I have two more in the chamber there before I am up to date, but it seems to be going on a similar line with the team says so far. So I hope it keeps going this way. Quite interested. I also have a theory that the, Lord Darknest, who is the top thing of the space parts. I got a theory that, need to get into it more. there are like 13 zodiac signs, or there were, or around some kind of media thing, sort of like a 13 when it keeps cropping up. I'm betting that it was the 13th one that got, it doesn't get counted amongst the regular 12 zodiac signs, and feels aggrieved by this. Let's just keep it on theme. Just kind of trying to see where it might be going to. But,
right.
Yeah. I'm kind of happy, may as well. I came back to it after a little bit of a break, and it comes back into some strong episodes too, because I was half thinking of, oh, this doesn't seem like a priority for me at the moment. But right now, I'm definitely excited to see where it might go.
Hmm.
And then finally, for the Toei stuff, we've got Gegege no Kitaro Geriatric Nupepo, in which Nezumi Otoko is up to a scheme again. Or rather, he is a proxy. It weirdly has echoes of the plot in My Hero Academia, where they were talking about criminals running things through proxies, because that turns out to be what's happening here.
Well, like, he's been run by some other guys, but that other guy's been run by a bigger guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just a money man. He's just a face of the business.
Yeah, so he's marketing beauty goods, which are turning people old, because what they're doing is draining the youth out of people. And this is being done by the Nupepo yokai on their island, so we have to break out the big clam to get there.
Every time that squad shows up,
I forget about that goddamn thing.
Got the whole squad down there in the aircraft carrier, which has like the nice little cottage and an allotment in the front if you need to pick some carrots for dinner or what have you.
And, yeah, they get there and instantly start getting made old. And it turns out that, I can't remember what the Japanese name for roller cloth is.
Sure.
So him, Kitaro, and Nekomasume start being aged by the Nupepo. Is it like their song or their chant? I can't remember what it was.
They have an evil spell that causes you to age.
Mm.
And it turns out, despite what she'd said, the sandwich had used some of these goods. And they're like, you're old already, it might make you senile. You have to, if you hear this chant, that might completely take you down. So you wait here with Old Man Crybaby.
Well, she's already drifting off.
Yes.
Yeah.
And while the rest of the episode pulls at your heartstrings between them two, and a fairly mundane plot for everybody else involved.
Like, everyone else is doing the standard plot, and they're doing, like, we've got some character shit we got to work out right now.
Yeah.
It's been bubbling under the whole time.
Yeah. Hey, kids, this is what you have to deal with when your parents start getting older. Or you may have to deal with when your parents start getting older. And when you start getting older, and you people you know are no longer the people you know.
I didn't like Kitaro reminding me of possibly my biggest fear in the fucking world.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's more heartbreaking for him, because then he's alone if her mind's gone.
Yeah, she's all he's got, basically.
Yeah. Mm. And when she writes that letter and wanders off, and then she's barely got anywhere before...
She goes off on a stare again, yeah.
There's nothing in my family of that history, but because one of my uncles...
Oh, that's still the fear, though, yeah.
Yeah, because one of my uncles worked at an old age pensioner's home. Yeah, we had plenty of stories of, like, people just wandering off.
Yeah, my grandmother on my father's side had it as well. I never knew her, but I've heard some stories of her in her kind of final days, and how there'd be fairly harrowing scenes to bear witness to, and then I'd see this person who raised you and had been this figure to you just sort of degenerate into this tragic state.
Not to bring it back to something dumb and everything, but while I'm not, I know they're going to bring it up that Babylon is really fucked up in the way, but that's the one thing I would like to bring suicide in, like a kind of thing of, like, before you lose the person that you are, being able to like kind of go out early rather than just degenerate into something that you were never. Just lose all those memories and everything that makes you you. I can see that being a thing that eventually is a kindness that people do to people, because it's just terrifying to see happen to someone who you care about, but also like to, that it might happen to you as well.
Yeah. And then for them to spring it on you on a Sunday morning kids cartoon show.
Exactly. That's
well, it's the same cartoon that showed us an old man dying in bed surrounded by his, spirit possessed, personal effects.
And this is also the exact same episode where my partner looked up from wearing headphones and said, that is the most lewd monster I've seen in that show so far. Cause it's just gross to look at. I hate looking at it.
It looks more like less, well, like what you can kind of link one to the other. It's more like the scrotum yokai.
Oh, dude, search that online. You'll find ones that are dicks. I did.
But yeah. I guess you do kind of sag it based on certain parts of your body as you get older, so you know you might form a little sad face when you flaps of skin.
Yeah. I was looking online. It's like the proto whatever the faceless dude is.
Noparabo.
Yeah. So this is like what they were before they were a Noparabo. Yeah, it's another faceless blob. Except this one's especially blobby.
It's blobby to the point where it kind of forms a gross face, but it's not actually a face, yeah.
Yeah, this is not what they're normally known for doing. They're normally just known for stinking of rotting flesh. But if you eat one, you become immortal!
No thanks.
it does seem like it, but okay, the guy's doing up the scroll of 101 demons, I guess he was at the end. How about a big blob with a face that's singing it? And it's kind of running out of ideas by the end.
Yes, I wonder what this one would be. Whether it was just some rotting flesh washed up on the shore.
Maybe someone found a fucking blobfish, like, way back.
Yeah, that could be it as well, yeah.
Maybe someone's, like, weird growth that they had on their back. It's like, ooh.
But the eating the flesh who are immortal is the same as the mermaid myth in Japan, isn't it? So.
It is.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Which makes me think it might have been a sea. Something washed up from the sea.
Yeah, it could even be, like, a sheep that fell into the fucking water and washed up all gross.
Particularly with the rotting flesh smell and things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do wonder whether, like, the, oh, it will make you immortal is just a thing to dare people to eat shit they should be eating.
eat that gross fucking malformed thing that washed up on the beach. It'll totally be good for you.
Wow, Bear Grylls is going to live forever, then.
If you can keep it down.
I think they handled it really well, the stuff with them, and it's quite touching, and like the...
I feel like it's skirting on a thing that's like uncomfortably romantic, but it kind of does the thing of like caring about each other enough, that kind of way.
Yes.
It balances that pretty well.
They depend on each other and they relate to each other.
They're like an old married couple, but they're not literally an old married couple, that kind of thing, yeah.
Also, they get the kill shot. No finger gun. Let them do their thing.
Yeah.
These old folks still got it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, because Kizaru and Nekomasume get trapped. Royal Cloth comes back for them. What gets her wits together? Oh, he's about to kiss her. That's the thing. Which brings her wits back is
he does kiss her.
Oh, he does kiss her. Yes, that's it. Yes, and he gets slapped for his efforts.
Brings her out of it enough to kind of get her to go. And even then, they have to keep kind of waking her up on roller cloth flying there. Roller cloth gets all wrinkly, but like the wall gets like punched in a like straight through because he realizes, wait a minute, I don't have ears to cover, so I'll be fine.
Yes.
So he has to get a fucking big hole punched in him to take him off.
But now he's got a cool Zoro scar at the end of the episode.
And it turns out this whole thing was Nurion's plan to make money.
Yeah. He even tells Kid Rod, it's like, hey, all their like youth is stored in a cave and bottles over there, so bye!
Yeah. That was sort of felt like, oh, by the way, this guy is still in the plot. Yes. Don't worry, we haven't forgotten about him. I don't feel be like, no, yeah, sure, money, but he already has money. It's more about using that to, like, create influence and sow this score between your kind and humans. This doesn't even feel like that's part of the grander scheme. This more seems like, you know, this, you on an off day in your area, huh? Come on, pull the finger out. This is one of your greatest schemes. Yeah.
And I guess they have to remind us in a couple of episodes or so that, Backbeard's waking up as well.
So they can have their go-karts, yeah.
Yeah.
Get a roll racer is coming to Switch this summer.
If they haven't made that a game, they're fucking missing out, man.
Yeah. I've not really looked into Kitaro video games. I'm sure there must have been plenty.
There's gotta have been, like, at least on the fucking the SNES or NES or something, right? Like he shoots out of his finger. It's fucking. It's basically like a little Mega Man. Just reskin it. It's done. You're good.
Survival horror. You got to survive being killed by these ridiculous ghosts. A Famicom game, like a NES game, of course. PS1 game. It's been on most platforms.
I would have figured there'd at least be like one per generation, then one per series that's out when it's kind of like big in the cultural knowledge. Not that it's ever went away, but just when it's bigger, basically.
I just guess, okay, there's an NES game. There'd definitely be a PS1 game. There's a PS2 game. There's bound to be a Game Boy or game and our Game Boy Advance game because they put a lot of old crap on those systems. Mm-hmm. But this could be very good games. I don't know. Video games. The last one we had was on the DS in 2008. You're gonna get a role. Yokai Daigekisen. And the obligatory, particular machine as well.
Of course, yeah, sure.
That's a given.
Righty ho, I do believe that is everything that we watched this week. Except me and Nar watched Promare.
Yeah.
Well, fucking well to do for some, huh?
Yep. I tell you what. I sold Promare and Promare accessories. That was a fun film.
It was. I'm glad I enjoyed it because I ended up buying tickets for it 3 times. but I'll talk about that more on our Dynamite in the Brain episode we're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very good. I'm not sure if you're a big Trigger fan that there's much to surprise you. It's satisfying as a Trigger fan. But I think if you're not familiar with Trigger, then from looking at reviews from people who've enjoyed it but aren't necessarily anime fans, I think it will surprise people who aren't familiar with it.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, well, even as looking at from a sort of plot line standpoint, it probably won't be much able to shock you either. You'll probably be able to read the exact course of this very easily. However, that's not the point. This is like a fairly, I say dumb but fun film, but very much fun, but that's very much in the Trigger brand. They're all about, being, pretty dumb. They acknowledge most of the characters are very, very dumb, but boy are they fun. And they actually acknowledge and lean on that dumbness, shall we say, to great effect in the, latter third of the film, where this point saying, it's like, how does this, like, thing work? Where did it come from? I don't know. Let's go out there and fight the bad guys. I'm just a guy.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the main character repeatedly tells everybody how stupid he is.
Those are my favorite characters.
And other people repeatedly tell him how stupid he is.
Excellent.
But there is some true. There's some really some things I really, really like. But I'll talk about that on the other podcast.
Sure.
And there's more showings of it this weekend. I think it was only Tuesday and Friday to begin with, but I think there's more showings in various places.
Hmm.
So if you can't get out there, you can get to see it.
By the time you hear this, you might be too late, but we have it on record.
It may be out again. Who knows? fingers crossed. I want One Piece Stampede next, please. This is what I need to see in terms of loud super action in the cinema.
We've had some surprising things come out, even older things on a re-release, so who knows?
Well, our fingers crossed for January. January was when Broly came out, wasn't it, I think, so.
Okay.
One could hope season, next year, yeah. But, But the problem is One Piece isn't as popular as Dragon Ball, is it?
Yeah, but I'll be super cheesed off if we get that Demon Slayer film before we can see a One Piece film in the cinema. I mean, I get that it's popular, people enjoy it, and it will be easy to fill a screen up with it, but my god, come on. This is One Piece. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah, that's a good point. Gold didn't get a release, did it? But Gold's not Stampede. Strong World. I saw Strong World in the cinema. But that was at a festival, not a wide
release. Yeah. I think I'm more of these wider releases, but put it on for one or two nights in a certain week in a month, which I'm all for, and when it's something like I can get to, but I generally go and see it because, hey, seeing an anime in the cinema, it's still a novelty. Yeah. I'll make time for something like Promare or Brony, which I'm looking forward to, but even if it was some, this is on, I'm off this day because like I work weird hours, I might just buy a ticket to that and just see it in the cinema because, okay. Hey,
why not? There's a Masaki Yuasa film as well, isn't there?
Oh yeah, sure. I saw You Over the Wall in the cinema. I saw Walk on Girl in the cinema. They're both the same deal. And we have, Ride Your Wave. That should be coming sometime pretty soon.
I would hope.
And Weathering With You, which I missed out on the, screening that was, here. I stepped on the tickets. I probably didn't anticipate they would just set out so quickly. We had a Q&A with Makoto Shinkai in it, but that's the kind of film that will be a fairly easy sell for most cinemas. If I'm going to review Your Name, that film we all love and had it in rotation for weeks and weeks, if not months.
Let's not say
I will be able to see that film fairly readily in this city, in this country, in the near future.
Weathering With You is showing 10th of December at the BFI South Bank.
That's the one that sold out, yeah.
That's the one sold out, is it? Okay, right.
Yeah.
I'm in no rush to see that, because I did not care for Your Name, and I've not cared for any of his films.
Yeah. I liked Your Name better than his previous things.
I agree. I liked Your Name better than his previous things, but I still didn't really like it.
Yeah. I still give it a go. I mean, again, it'll be on, I'd say, for a good couple of weeks, whenever it does come out. So yeah. It won't be hard to see. And that's probably going to be, again, a day off. Well, I got a day off. I've got, and go see a matinee just for fairly cheap. Let's just go and do it. Again, novelty, anime, cinema. It's a golden age.
Rightio, we'll be back next week with more of this nonsense. Goodbye.
Bye.